Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome, everybody, to this 2023 pre-draft, draft day, basically, edition of the Football GM Podcast. Mike Sando of The Athletic here, along with the GM, Randy Mueller. How are you doing, Randy? You ready for the draft?
I am, Mike. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be cool to watch it unfold. It's that time of year, and as you know, I love the whole process of it all, so I'm into it, whether I'm in a war room or not. I think I understand what these guys are going through, and it's a lot of fun for me. When we get closer to the actual draft, like today, I hearken back to some of the time when, once the hay's in the barn, you kind of get to a little bit of exhale, right? And I remembered a couple things I did, like the night before the draft, I wanted to get out of there. I wanted to get out of the draft room and get away and kind of clear my head. You have so much clutter in there. I remember one time I took a couple of the guys and we played nine holes of golf in the evening the night before. Another time, Mickey and I took our daughters, Mickey Loomis, took our daughters to a play in Seattle, Lion King. And so we did just something to get away, something to get all of the jargon out of your mind. And so the last 24 hours or so, I've been thinking about some of those things we used to do. Nowadays, they'd probably say, oh, you don't want to work. You don't want it bad enough, you know?
Yeah.
So
Well, hey, there's a lot of Lion Kings out there, but it's the Lion Kings. There's a lot of Lion Kings.
Right,
because check out this headline. Will Levis's odds to go one rise after anonymous post? That's a freak. That's when we know it's the draft, right?
That's
we know
nuts.
It's time for the draft. I'm
absolutely
like,
nuts. Somebody bid on that hook, line, and sinker. It's crazy. Hey, watch him get picked first. You never know.
I know. I love after the draft more than before the draft for me, because I love to see what everybody did. I think it's hard enough for the teams to evaluate and have a handle on these guys, let alone me, right? Feel strongly like, oh, they ought to get this guy or that guy. I just like to see how it all fits together when we're done. And and then you can kind of look going forward. And the funny thing is, Randy, for almost all these teams, it is a long-term building thing, because the Super Bowl odds don't change the day after the draft.
No.
All this effort goes in. It's not like the next day, oh my gosh, they got this guy in the second round. That changes everything. It's not that, right?
Right. The thing that gets me is, and maybe it's just me being old guy on the couch now, The information that a lot of the analysts get on the outside is minuscule to what they have on the inside. So I can appreciate the passion of Dan Orlovsky or Todd McShay or some of these people, but I got news for you. They know so much less than the teams on the inside about all of these players that I just wish the listeners could understand that. And so they do their job great. They're really good on TV. I get it. But there's a lot more information that I wish the listeners could be privy to that would help explain a lot of the decisions that we're going to see, especially in the first and second rounds.
So we've got the draft, obviously, we're going to talk about. Randy's going to unveil his top 10 overall prospects today. We're going to get into his, with some overlap, his top defensive front seven players. We've done some other positions in the past. We're definitely getting into the Aaron Rodgers press conference and him starting out with the Jets, which, by the way, Randy, I don't know if you watched that. At the beginning, they actually played music.
Oh, my gosh.
So they had a table set up with the three water bottles, right? So you're going to have the GM, the coach, and the quarterback. And then they kind of come in like stage left, right, this door. And as they're coming in, there is music playing. I thought it was really cheesy. They come in and they sit down, and then the owner's going to talk about them. But first, I think they asked for a round of applause. So
they ask for it?
Yes. They said, how about a round of applause? And so we're going to talk about all of this. But that just struck me as, like, usually in these things, it's just you have media there, but then they also will bring in maybe some sponsors or people from the business side, right? So you have on a thing like today, there could be 30 people in there that aren't from the media, right? That are team employees, and so they're the ones clapping in the background. But we'll get into that. We've got the GM notebook. But the Rodgers thing is great. We got a bunch of stuff on Rodgers. But let's, with the draft now, let's hit your top 10 overall prospects. I think I'd rather do that. Let's just not bury the lead and try to, we're going to hold this to the last thing. No, let's get into it, Randy, and talk about your top 10 overall prospects in this draft. Maybe get into a little bit, you know, how you do it and how this might be the same or different than if you were with a team in the NFL right now.
Well, I think the big thing for me was that I found about 15 or 16 really good players that I would consider no-brainer first-round picks. And so when you start with the premise of some drafts, there's maybe 6 or 8 really blue-chip players. Others are a little deeper than this. I think this, by the time I was done looking at everybody, I had 15 or 16 guys that I would be happy as heck to have as part of really any team build. And I don't think that really fits specifically with a lot of the stuff we hear out there, because there's some guys that some mock drafts have certain players in the top 5, 6 that they wouldn't even be in my top 16. So again, this is just my opinion. And to answer your question with how this relates to draft rooms, again, it's hard when you don't build consensus. I think you've got to build consensus, and none of us are smarter than all of us. And I always say that, but it's never more true than on draft day. There may be in an NFL room 10 different opinions. So there's 10 Randy's top 10s that everybody has. I would make sure everybody saw all these guys, weighed in on them. They may see something that I didn't see, something that the scout next to them didn't see. We're going through it with a fine-tooth comb. So it's kind of the way I left it. And each one of these guys is fun for me to talk about because, let's face it, they are good players, but some of them come with some risk. Some of them come with some baggage. Some of them come with, just because they're in, well, the first guy off top of the list, I may list him first, but that doesn't mean I'm going to pick him first. You know, so there's reasons behind why you have him. My first guy, if we just start with the top of the list, is Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle from Georgia. I mean, we all know what kind of player this guy is. He is dominant on film, and I could go on and on about the things that he does, but we all know about the events, about the character things, about the intangibles that everybody is questioning. So once again, I'm gonna let the teams dictate. If somebody doesn't pick him in the top 3 or 4, there's a lot more worse stuff on here than we know. I'll just say that. Because as a player on tape, for me, he was the best player there was. And really, for that reason, he's also the most riskiest player. And I don't know if I could ever say this about a draft where I viewed a guy as being the best, but yet the most riskiest pick because of the intangible stuff. So I don't think that's a secret to anybody that he's a good player. But I was, at the end of the day, a little surprised that I loved him that much, because I knew already all the background stuff. And I didn't really feel like I could ding him. I went into it with the idea of, man, do I really want to do this? The film just spoke for itself. The kid dominates. He could probably play anywhere up front you want. Nose, 3 technique, 5 technique. They even put him out on the edge to let him rush the passer. He throws guards around like they're ragdolls. I mean, he is so physical, so dominating at the point of attack. There's some college games, Mike, where he's really unblockable. I felt bad for the guards and centers that were trying to block this guy, because that's how powerful he was. And I'm talking about really powerful, where he plays with some leverage that the other side had no chance. So he was my top guy. I don't know how that fits around the world of analysts, but the first two guys for me were both defensive linemen. The second guy for me was Tyree Wilson, the defensive end from Texas Tech. I see him listed on a lot of people's drafts as an edge player. And you know how I feel about edge, right? I'm not sure there's...
Yeah, really, I want to throw you off over the edge.
There's no position for edge. You're either a linebacker or you're a defensive lineman, and you got to play on first and second down too. And maybe it's on me that I identify edge labels as a third down pass rusher. I got news for you. I haven't seen too many third down pass rushers that are that good that we don't care what they're doing on first and second down. So for me, this guy's a defensive end, Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech. He's 273 pounds. He's 6'5". To me, he's the old throwback 5 technique in a 3-4 defense. I think he fits about anywhere like Carter does. I could see this guy being a 5 technique in the Steelers 3-4 front. I could see him being an end in a Pete Carroll, you know, defensive four-man front. That's how good he is. So he is smoother than he is sudden. He's really strong with his hands. He plays with really good technique. He is not a pure outside speed rusher. That's not his game. He is more of a technique-oriented beat guys with different type of moves inside, not a real flashy guy. And for that reason, he doesn't have a great resume on paper. You don't see a ton of sacks. You don't see a ton of anything. But he kind of comes across as a middle reliever, you know, a guy that just eats up blockers. He's eaten up innings. He's eaten up time. And before you know it, gosh, he's played 98% of the snaps, and maybe he only has a couple pressures, but the guys around him are a lot better. And that's why I put him up here at the top, because he's an every down player for me. I couldn't ever consider bringing in positional players that don't play a real position. I think a lot of drafts, mistakes are made on those edge players because it's all about fit to me. And I think these two guys I've spoken of off the bat, two defensive linemen, fit almost regardless of schemes.
It's interesting. So at the combine, when that Jalen Carter stuff was coming up, you know, I was talking to a scouting director who I've known for a number of years, and he said at that time, he said, I think Tyree Wilson replaces Jalen Carter in the top five if he medically checks out. Now, his assumption was that the Carter stuff could be bad enough that he dropped even outside of the top five, which we'll see. We don't
know. And it might. Yeah, we don't know. Right.
But that's, you know, a top five type player for Tyree Wilson. So we've got two of them up there. And then what becomes interesting in the actual draft is how many quarterbacks go, because not every team wants a quarterback. And that's where if you could really be in that sweet spot, if you're picking 5, 6, 7, if a bunch of quarterbacks go early, you might be able to get one of these types of players where you would normally.
No doubt. And for me, I want to get through three, and I won't have talked about a quarterback yet. The third guy for me is Bijan Robinson, the running back from Texas, who – again, I didn't go into it with the idea of I'm going to love a running back. I know everybody, what they say about him. You can't have him on a second contract. They're going to wear out all this. Just watch the tape, people. This kid jumps out in every way. And I spent a bunch of years in Charger land with LaDainian Tomlinson. He's the closest thing to him that I've seen since leaving there. This kid can do it all in three downs. He can run with power. He can run with agility. He can make people miss. He runs downhill. He catches everything. You could even play this kid in the slot. I think he could do about anything you want him to do. And because he's such an offensive weapon, I would consider picking this guy really high. I just think he's also a culture changer. You put him somewhere, you know, like Atlanta, where they're going to run the ball and their will to run is great, like in Arthur Smith's offense. He could help change that whole culture there in a heartbeat. I know what some of these running backs do when they get somewhere, and they can go beyond the X's and O's. This guy goes well beyond the scheme, the play call, everything else. And I hope that makes sense, because he's going to take your scheme to another level. And a lot of coaches value that. All should, but a lot of them value that. And I think that's what you'll get with Bijan Robinson.
Yeah, and I think the philosophical debate of a running back so high is at some of these positions, when you, let's just say if you take Tyree Wilson, you're getting him on a huge discount relative to what he would cost if he was in his fourth year, right? On a veteran contract for that player, there's a huge gap, right?
So look at Brinson Buckner or something like that. Look at what he got. Yeah.
Yeah. But or DeForest Buckner. Yeah.
DeForest Buckner. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but with a running back, when you draft him that high, he's making nearer the top of the heap, right? So you're not getting as much of a, whatever you'd call that, a discount or a gap value. Mm-hmm. Do you care about that type of thing? Just a little bit, not enough to sway you off a player like this? Are you thinking of this more like, hey, LaDainian Tomlinson's in this draft. I want him.
You know? Well, that's the thing. I don't think you can dismiss what you're saying. I understand that, but I'm not going to let that sway the value I put on a player. I'm going to let the football play itself speak first. And if we can massage a little bit where we're not taking a step down to take a player that fits the criteria that you're talking about, then maybe we consider that. But I think this kid's too good. I don't think you need to worry about it. I think, and again, we've seen the numbers come in on these running backs. So what if he's the highest paid guy? If he's, what's that going to take him to 12, 14 million a year, something like that? If I can change the culture of my locker room and change the offense, what I want to do, I'm willing to pay that kind of money. And I think this guy's one of those guys. He's got to be more than a runner with the ball. And that's how I kind of view him is he's clearly more than a runner. He does all kinds of things, and I think the intangibles obviously are going to be a bonus as well. But he's going to take whatever offense is schemed and wherever he's at, to another level above what they think they can coach it up to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So first three ranked players in terms of how much you like them as football players, setting aside some of those off-the-field things the teams have to figure out and see what they think about it. No quarterbacks yet, but we've got one at number four.
Yeah, we've got quarterbacks coming up here. But I'm kind of the outlier. I think C.J. Stroud is the best player for me. I think he's the least risky of them. It's funny, I had this in the GM notebook, and I know we like to pilfer the GM notebook before we even get there.
I do. Yeah. That's where I get all my best stuff.
But the latest rumors you hear on C.J. Stroud are that he didn't score well on this aptitude or intelligence or processing test or whatever.
The S2 test, yeah.
Whatever that is. All I know is the film does not indicate any such thing. So it also, and we'll talk about this when we get to it, it also had Will Levis scoring really high. And I think decision-making might be his lowest attribute. So I don't know much about this test, but I already am skeptical of it because it doesn't really match up to what I see on film. So I had C.J. Stroud. You know, he's 6'3". He makes the throws. I won't elaborate too much. We've talked about the quarterbacks already. But his accuracy, his ability to get it out on time, and his ability to process for me make him the top guy. And I think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL early, if not this year.
It is interesting because I can remember, so in the last few years, this S2 test has become more popular, and I have actually sat with a GM a couple years ago and we were looking at what the numbers said about various players, and the correlation seemed to be generally pretty helpful. Like, it did kind of line up most of the time. What's that so interesting here, it seems like it totally doesn't line up for this player. Right. So it just shows you these are tools.
And yeah, they're tools. That's right. The hard part is, so do you count on them or not? Can you use them or not? Who says when you apply it and when you don't? That's the hard thing.
Yes. Well, I would think that, I would think it could be most helpful for players that you don't know very much about, right? You haven't watched a film. I don't know. Are you looking at the it's interesting.
Yeah, maybe you get confirmation. Maybe it gives you confirmation on what you've seen on tape. Yeah. One way or another. So maybe that's the application it should be used. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to put everything into a test like that when I'm not seeing that when I watch the kids play. Yeah. So that's a hard one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it is. And the founders of that test say, hey, look, if you get a low score and it doesn't mean you can't play, it may mean you have strengths in one or the other. But I don't think you can discount certainly what people have seen from C.J. Stroud playing and say that that didn't happen because he didn't do well in this test. So we got him at four. You've got Bryce Young at five.
Yeah, I do. And I think everybody said all their piece on him. And I have really no doubts about Bryce Young and his skill set. The only problem I have is same as most of us guys that have been around a long time is he's not just an outlier for this draft. He's an outlier for the history of the draft. And everybody says it doesn't affect his ability, and I agree. It does not affect his ability to play, but it, I think, has to be a factor in longevity, in durability, in being injury prone. We've seen, you know, him play against big players before, so there's always a pushback on that. But as you know, Mike, these seasons are long. They're grueling. The first thing every quarterback does, ask Russell Wilson this, he was 5'10 or 5'11. First thing they do when they get in the league is they gain a bunch of weight, right? They want to be stronger. They want to be thicker. They want to be more durable. I just don't know if this kid can do that. I don't think he's ever going to weigh 210, 215 pounds. He's just a frail looking kid. So that's the only problem I have. And you can say, well, you're going to have to play against him. I'm okay with that too. So, but I do have him listed as my fifth guy out of the top 10.
It would be fascinating, Randy, if you were a team that really needed one, right? And if you were picking, you know, if you were picking after the first pick, so you don't get your first pick at the quarterback. Let's just say if you were Houston, right, mm-hmm. and he were available to you. Let's say in your case you have Stroud higher and you would take him, but let's just say Stroud was gone for you and you really needed one. That's quite a consideration, isn't it? I mean, because it's hard to pass on a quarterback, isn't it?
It is hard, and I totally understand the dilemma that some of these teams are in. And most of all, I understand this, that the process where you're going to pick a player in the top five, you better have 100% conviction and consistent consensus. And there will be somebody in more rooms than not who are going to just say what I said. A scout, a coach, a player. I had a discussion with a coach last night, he'll remain nameless. He said the first thing, and I didn't even say anything, was he was a non-starter for me just because of that. It was a non-starter to even consider doing this. So there's some people lot more hardline against this outlier of 80 years of drafting players than even I am. Yep. So maybe I'm the riding the fence. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, resetting your top five, Jalen Carter, Tyree Wilson, Bijan Robinson, C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young. Number six, a cornerback from Oregon.
Yeah, Christian Gonzalez. 3 years in college, a young, really athletic kid who I think has giant upside. He has the length. He has the athleticism. He has the instincts and reaction. Remind me a lot of Sean Springs. He might even be more athletic than Sean. And if you remember, we picked Sean third in the draft. And that's another thing that people say, well, you can't take a corner that high. I could take this kid because I also think he has a lot of upside once he gets to the NFL game and the NFL coaches and the NFL development that he could skyrocket. I don't think the kid's 21 years old. If he is, he just turned 21. So I just think there's a lot of upside there. And I think somebody is going to jump on that and be happy to get him maybe in the top five or six picks.
Yep. That's an interesting one to me. Like if a Seattle is sitting there at five.
Yep. He fits every part of them. Yep.
Yeah. And maybe one of those, they really would like one of those big guys, but they're not there or whatever. They've gone, you know, that's could be an interesting spot. So number seven.
The next guy for me is a big guy, and you know how I am. I always say, let's get big guys and fast guys, especially in that top 10. And Broderick Jones, the tackle from Georgia, is the first player for me that relates to the offensive line that I think makes sense. Big, athletic, agile, can bend, really strong. I understand there may be some intangible questions on him. I get that part. Whether it's work ethic, I don't know all the details that these teams know, and that may push him down a little bit. But if you just watch the tape, Mike, there's nothing in his toolbox that's missing. I think he's an NFL starting left tackle. You're not projecting him from another position. You're not asking him to play in a different system. He's going to do fine and fit in right away, just like he did at Georgia. And I think an NFL team will find a left tackle right away.
So what's interesting, I don't know, we maybe didn't rank the offensive tackles this year at offensive line. We may not have gotten to that. But on these, if you take kind of the consensus of what, is out there in media, there would be the Northwestern tackle, Peter Skoronski, and then there would be the Ohio State tackle, Paris Johnson Jr. Why do you like Broderick Jones better? And do you, assuming you looked at the offensive linemen, I don't know if you looked at all of them, but
I did.
But do you see a big gap in Jones is a lot better?
I do. I think Skoronski is a tackle that's going to have to move to guard. He may even be a center at the end of the day. But Broderick Jones has the length to exist on an island without a question. The other guys that you mentioned, then Paris is my second lineman, so I'm good with Paris as well. He just didn't fall in the top 10, but he would be in my top 15. Skoronski for me is a little more of a, and I don't want to, I'm just saying a Pete Kendall guy, a guy that's going to have to probably move inside that played tackle all through college. I don't know that he can stand up against the premier edge rushers outside that he hasn't really faced yet. The NFL, as you know, is a different bird for speed rushers, and he'll see a steady diet of that. So not downgrading him. I just didn't see him in the same light as Broderick Jones.
Yep. So number eight for you is somebody that other people may have number one. Yep. Will Anderson, Alabama.
Will Anderson, that's right. Will Anderson from Alabama. He's really the edge guy that is kind of makes me a little bit nervous in that he plays hard. He has a relentless motor. He has really good instincts, and he's been coached up a lot. I know these guys at Alabama and how Nick Saban coaches them. So he's going to have a lot of tools and have a lot of things that are going to make him a good NFL player. I just didn't see that elite athleticism to go make a lot of things happen on his own. And that's why I dinged him a little bit. And I've seen most people have him in the top four or five. Some I've even heard, hey, he's the best player in the draft. I just saw a tad bit of stiffness in him as an athlete, whether it's in his ankles or his hips. And I know people will say, gosh, that seems pretty petty. When you become a pass rusher and you've got to decide how to get around one of these big tackles, you've got to eventually have some athleticism that allows you to get down under and bend and get under and use leverage to turn the corner and bend back. I just don't know if he can do that. This guy's going to be schemed in a lot of ways, schemed to get his sacks. But I love the motor. I love the intangibles. I think he's a really good player. Just didn't see him as type of athlete that some of the guys above him are, for me anyway.
That'll be fascinating to see where he goes.
Sure, and again, these guys are going to go in different spots, Mike. I'm not projecting where they're going to go. I'm just projecting them from my eyes, from what I saw on tape. So, and the other thing is where they get drafted doesn't really matter either. I want to see how they play and how they fit with where they're going. So we can revisit this in a couple years, but
sure.
It's surely not the end of the line when, oh, he's right, he got picked third. Oh, he's wrong, he got picked ninth.
No.
It doesn't matter where they got picked. That's just the next step in this process of developing and building your team.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
The Athletic Football Show is sponsored by BetterHelp. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and to make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/maze today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MAYS.
Okay, so after Jalen Carter, Tyree Wilson, Bijan Robinson, C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, Christian Gonzalez, Broderick Jones, Will Anderson, let's round out here with number 9 and number 10. Number 9, who do you got?
Yeah, Joey Porter Jr. for me, the corner from Penn State. He's much like Gonzalez from Oregon, that he's elite athletically. I thought he's a little less smooth and a little more frantic than Gonzalez. I think Gonzalez is a really smooth player and nothing bothers him. I think Joey Porter is going to be a really good player. I equated Joey Porter to the corner from Carolina, J.C. Horn. J.C. Horn is a really comparable player to Joey Porter Jr. in most athleticism categories and the way he plays the ball. So I really like these two in the same vein. And I think J.C. got picked like 7th or 8th, somewhere in there. So it's a close, I think, comparison. I like the fact that he has got the gene pool of being Joey Porter Sr.'s kid. Nothing's going to be too big for him. The moment of truth, he plays the ball really well. And I really like him. He's going to be a starting corner right away and probably make his share of Pro Bowls. But that was a no-brainer for me. And I think he's going to go somewhere and change a defense because of his attitude, too. He's a little bit like his dad. He loves to play. He's got great passion for it. And I think Joey Porter Jr. will be a top, six or eight pick for sure. My last guy, Mike, is Dalton Kincaid, the tight end from Utah. And you know how I am with tight ends. I'm not loving to pick tight ends up here. This guy's a difference maker for me. I think he's going to be a really fun career to watch, probably in the vein of a Kelsey, I just think the top tight ends, this guy's athleticism makes him more than a tight end. He's really a receiver. He's really an offensive weapon. He can be schemed any way you want. But at the end of the day, if you don't scheme him, he's going to find ways to get open, and I think he'll be the quarterback's best friend. So I didn't go into it with the idea that I would love a tight end. He won me over and might have been my most yeah. fun guy to watch on tape.
Yeah, because exactly. You don't love taking one too high. And as we look at these players in the top 10, you weren't necessarily shifting it towards positional value or anything like that, but they're all pretty much quote-unquote premium position, except there's a running back and a tight end. But you describe both of them as not being like typical running backs and tight ends. So
they're
if
really
Travis
good.
Kelce is in this draft right now, he's going in the top five, right?
George Kittle, I mean, the same way. Those guys are really good difference-making players, and I think Dalton Kincaid will be like that. So I'm happy with anybody I get in this top 10, trust me. And this probably extends for me, like I started off by saying, 15 or 16 deep. So there's some guys just on the fringe that I could have easily pushed up there to 9 or 10.
All right, before we get to Aaron Rodgers, let's just go quickly through your – looks like you did a top five and a tie for five for your defensive front seven players, and three of them we've already discussed, so this will be quick.
Yeah, we talked about Jalen Carter. We talked about Tyree Wilson. We talked about Will Anderson. A couple of surprises for me. This Kalijah Kancey, the defensive tackle from Pittsburgh, was a fun watch, and I don't know much about him. Mike, you may know or have heard more about him. This kid is quick as a cat. He reminds me a little bit of Aaron Donald, and I know that's Donald, and I know that's, you know, high rent district to throw a guy like this in, but it is a hard block, and this guy's he's only like 6'1", he's 285 pounds. People are going to say, gosh, dang, there's no way. He's not an imposing figure. Just try to block the guy. I see people double-teaming him. He splits it. He gets around guards. He gets around centers. He may even be split out and rush some on the edge. He plays the run. He's really instinctive. And, again, a fun guy for me to watch. So I had him up there as a first-round pick for sure. Kalijah Kancey from Pitt. The other two guys I had voted – or not voted. I had them ranked about the same. Lucas Van Ness, a defensive end from Iowa, and Brian Breesy, a defensive end from Clemson. Both three-down players. Breesy's a little more versatile, the Clemson kid, in that he could play inside, he could play outside. I think he's a powerful, strong dude that's awkwardly athletic and a little underrated as an athlete. Van Ness, to me, is I'm not going to say he's Joey Bosa, but he comes from that kind of skill set. He's a guy that can get on the edge. He can rush the passer. He's going to run. I think he ran 4.5 something at the combine. Really athletic looking 6.5 kid that I think is going to be more of a fit in a four-man front. He's not going to be a five technique where he anchors in there and plays the run. I think you'd be misusing him. So those were actually six defensive linemen that I think all have a chance to go in the first round. I'd be happy with any of those, depending on our scheme and the fit for those last couple.
Yeah, absolutely. Good list. Love the top 10. Got a couple asterisks there as this draft unfolds. We'll be watching to see where they go. I love the discussion of the order of these defensive players up front and just who likes what and where they land and how they fit. It's really going to be fun as the draft gets going. Aaron Rodgers. Okay, there was some Aaron Rodgers fatigue, obviously, in Green Bay, and we had fatigue on the podcast having to talk about, but I'm reborn, Randy.
Oh, my.
I am reborn.
You're a bigger man than me. Okay, I took about 5 minutes at that press conference, and it didn't get rejuvenated. It didn't do it for me, but I hear you. Go ahead. Sorry.
you're done with Aaron.
I'm not saying I'm completely done with him, but I'm done with the woe is me, and you know, hey, he's 39 years old. He almost retired, and now we're saying he's the second coming, so I don't know. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I like the fact that he's not wearing Broadway Joe's 12. That scored a couple points with me.
Yes,
I still remember 100%. Watching Jerry Rice wearing Steve Largent's retired 80 in Seattle, and it's not right. Even though it's Jerry Rice, even though it's Aaron Rodgers, it's not right. So
that seems like a Dunn move. Dave Dunn's his agent, really smart dude, good guy, and I think that was probably a little recommendation, maybe that hey, this doesn't make sense. Yeah. Even though Broadway Joe said we could wear his jersey, I don't think we should.
No, I love that he's not, because then you have one bad game. The New York Post headline's great about how he's not Broadway Joe, you know, any of that type of stuff. So proper respects paid there. That was a good start to me. I think the two key takeaways from the news conference were, one, he's going to be there for the offseason, which he better be. I mean, after this, all that issue with Green Bay, that was a problem. They had young receivers. He wasn't there.
Right.
Don't like that. I like the fact that he's going to be there. And then I thought it was clear that he's happy to be reunited with Hackett. So I think coming to work is probably going to be more fun for him. We'll talk a little bit about that later, whether we think that's good or bad. And then I thought the other thing was that the contract is in some sort of flux. He didn't commit to playing more than 1 year. But I've got some thoughts on that, too, that we'll get to. The first thing, though, Hackett, terrible time in Denver. You don't sound very optimistic that he's going to suddenly be coordinating a great offense with the Jets.
Well, it's a leap of faith that hasn't happened yet. And it is truly a leap of faith because it was not his offense in Green Bay the last 3 or 4 years either. Because, as we know, Matt LaFleur is really the offensive guru and the mind behind that. So that offense that Aaron ran there is probably going to be similar to what we have. But it's really never been coordinated by Nathaniel Hackett as the play caller. Obviously, we know what happened in Denver last year. That was a debacle from the start. There's some extra circumstances there that obviously probably weren't Hackett's fault. But, you know, we'll see. A couple things. The Jets' offense was not good last year. We got to remember, they fired their offense coordinator, and that was LaFleur's brother, right? So maybe the offense is going to be similar, but the fact is that they let people go because the offense stunk last year. So they've got a ways to go to get it back on track. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is going to help a little bit with that. But so there's some question there a little bit for me. The thing that I thought about first was, and if you just go back to the deal itself, the first thing I thought of was, did the Jets overpay here a little bit? That's probably what struck me most and soonest was, gosh, dang, I thought the Packers had a lot of motivation to make this deal too. But it seems to me like the Jets were the least patient because they gave a 2. They gave what probably will be a 1 next year for a guy that talked about retiring, had to come out of darkness and decided to get motivated because he was kind of slapped in the face by the Packers. What if he does only play 1 year? I mean, they've given up a first and a second for 1 year. I don't know that that's a great deal. So I was taken back a little bit by the price the Jets ended up paying, that's for sure. Maybe you can talk me into feeling better about it from the Jets standpoint.
Well, you always say there's something that is not known that once it is known changes how we think about it. So I had better
believe. You know something? You got some smarts here?
No. I'm saying the Jets had better know something.
Oh,
and
maybe,
the Jets. Yeah. I thought the most interesting thing about this was, they moved a bunch of his salary around, and I want to see what the next deal looks like. You know, do they just shift it back to kind of what it was? There's some cap considerations there, right. But that's going to answer some of those questions. The other thing about, I thought on the surface, disappointing that he's not going to commit to more than 1 year at the press conference.
Yeah.
But then it was funny. I was talking to somebody that I talk to regularly in the league, and he goes, don't forget now, the Jets love the media interest and drama. The Packers can't wait to get out of it.
Yeah.
But Rodgers is going to just thrive on the back of the New York Post.
Of course.
The Jets welcome the relevance. They want everyone to be talking about them, and is Rodgers going to do it? And as long as they have a good feel, like I think if they have a good year, I think he's not going to retire. I think the only way he retires is if he is hurt, it's not fun, they're bad, he's being mocked. And if that happens, then you lost the trade. But you lost the trade anyway. There's not a long list, Randy, of these deals to compare it against. And say, well, you know, if you look at when Peyton Manning changed, well, he had a broken neck. So that was a weird thing. Right. Brady kind of talked his way out through Robert Kraft and got to just kind of go pick.
Right.
There's not a lot of precedent for what the price should be. But I do think, you know, what do you think about Woody Johnson, though, as an influencer? We always talk about the Packers. Hey, sometimes they'd be better off if they had an owner. Maybe in this case, the Packers were better off not having one because it allowed them to slow play it. And maybe Woody Johnson, who was so excited at the press conference, he asked everybody to applaud. Maybe he was putting the pressure on. When's this getting done? When's this getting done? And then they end up doing a deal that didn't take advantage of the leverage you talked about.
100% agree. I think it did show a little desperation on the Jets. I think they could have made a better deal, and I'm not being critical. I understand they want to get the player at this time, and timing means everything. But yes, I think you're correct in that the Packers benefited from not having an owner. I think in this case, the Jets, when your owner is a fan, that's not a good thing. I mean, you're influenced by public sentiment. You're influenced by people in your ear outside your own building. I think I would have just held tight as at least up until draft time to make it happen. Maybe they couldn't do that for whatever reason. But I think there is precedent for some older quarterbacks being traded. I mean, we just saw Matt Ryan last year go for a third-round pick. He's 37. Warren Moon got traded at 37. Montana at 36. Favre at 38. Aaron Rodgers is older than all these guys. So none of those deals approached the compensation that the Jets gave to the Packers, I don't believe.
But none of those guys won two MVPs in the last 3 years. So, I mean, I think, you know, that's probably right. I mean, unless you think that Rodgers is done. I mean, maybe.
Well, I'm not saying he's done, but I'm just saying Warren Moon got traded, and then he ended up playing another year or two with us in Seattle, and he was still really good back then, too. So, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you can be critical of it. I think most Jet fans are going to love it regardless. They don't care. They just want to throw the picks around and hope that the 60s come back now. You heard Aaron Rodgers talk about the trophy, the Super Bowl trophy from whatever year that was, 1968 or whatever. And, you know, I'm not going to rain on that parade. They got the quarterback they wanted. Let's just see now how good it makes them. And I think that's the bottom line. And you're probably right. Yeah. If they play good, if they end up making the playoffs, I'm sure he'll stay. Now, you mentioned some stuff on the pregame talk we had about his contract being redone. I think some details of that are going to dictate a little bit how this is seen by those of us on the inside anyway.
I'm just fascinated. Getting back to the Hackett thing, and I think Rodgers is going to be reborn from that relationship. I think coming to work for him is going to be fun now, and he's going to have more probably say in exactly how they're going to do it. And so as I looked at Hackett, it's funny. Hackett, as an offensive coordinator, here's his quarterbacks. E.J. Manuel in Buffalo, they were 26th on offense. Kyle Orton in Buffalo, 27th. Blake Bortles in Jacksonville, 24th. Blake Bortles, 12th. I mean, maybe you get a medal for being 12th on offense with Bortles. Blake Bortles, 30th. Then we go to the 3 years with Rodgers where you're right. He's not really the caller there. And they're 10th, 1st, and 1st. Then you get with Russell Wilson, you're 27th. But I'm putting that on Wilson. I think Wilson really is the one who is holding back the offense more than I would say Hackett would. I think Hackett was proved to not be ready to handle that situation as a head coach in Denver. But guess what? He goes to the Jets. Who's calling 2 minute? Not Hackett. Who's calling 4 minute? Not Hackett. Who's calling timeouts? Not Saleh.
Yeah.
This stuff is all now handled by one of the three or four people in the world who can handle those things.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to be very interested to see. I would love to see the odds on this. Who's got a better offense this year, Hackett, Rodgers, or Sean Payton and Russell Wilson? I'm going to go Hackett, Rodgers, because I think the quarterback's more important. But I also think Hackett with Rodgers probably has an energy and a positivity to it that Hackett with Bortles and Hackett with Orton or Manuel isn't going to have. So I'm going to bet a little bit more on that. We talked about you know Garrett Wilson, the receiver they took last year. You loved him. I think he's going to benefit from this. You've got Alan Lazard there, who he's familiar with. Probably a motivated guy to make this work, wouldn't you think?
I agree.
Out of spite, possibly.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
I'm betting a little bit more on the upside of it.
Yeah, I think there's some good points you made for sure. I think it'd be a fun bet. I think it'll be cool to follow. You can throw LaFleur and Jordan Love in there too, and see how that shakes out in that threesome of quarterbacks and coordinators. So, you know, we'll see. Yeah. I think maybe my skepticism is a little bit more on the Jets as a whole than it is on this relationship with Hackett, with Rodgers, with, you know, the rest of their offense. I'm not ready to pronounce the Jets Super Bowl ready, like we get driven every time you turn the TV on. I'm not there yet with this team build as a whole. So I hear you, though. Good valid points, and I'll be having my popcorn ready to watch.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm also not betting on them to even win a playoff game yet. I think we need to see how this develops over the course of the offseason. The thing that Rodgers gives you is a chance to be something that you can't be otherwise. It doesn't guarantee it's going to happen. I just feel like they've had no chance. I mean, their ceiling was maybe squeaking into the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think their ceiling is a lot higher now. It doesn't mean they're going to reach the ceiling, but they have a higher ceiling. I think that's what they're paying for. Totally with you that I think they really sort of bailed the Packers out of a tough situation. There wasn't a market of four teams here. Wait. Why do we have to have the press conference today? Right. Yeah, I would bet you the owner had a lot to do with that.
And to that end, it probably was reflective in the conditions of that pick next year that they have to give up, being the fact that it's only determined from what we've seen by a 65% play time. That's nuts. I mean, I would have put some big conditions on there. Yeah, I mean, it's 11 games. That's right. He's going to play that. I would have made that a little tougher for sure. How about some team incentives and some other things that were dictated in there? But I think you're right. There was pressure from certain parts of the organization, building, whatever, to make a deal. So we can nitpick the deal to death. I'm glad it's done. I'm glad he is there. Now a lot of it's going to fall on Aaron Rodgers, like you said, and just see how much he can carry a team that has not been there before.
Did you hear the FaceTime comment? You see that one?
No, what did he say?
So, because we're recording this shortly after the news conference. So somebody asked him, I think there was Green Bay reporters there. They asked Rodgers during the news conference, hey, Aaron, you know, Brian Gutekunst, GM of the Packers, said he was trying to reach you off season. You know, what the heck? Not picking up? And he goes, well, you know, I'm paraphrasing here. Well, you know, I blessed to live in a wonderful house, but the only downside is I've got kind of bad cell service. So, you know, unless you're FaceTiming me and I see your face, I'm probably not going to, you know, I may not see it looking through my call log here. So I'm assuming he's thinking, you know, like FaceTime audio or FaceTime video is usually handled by your Wi-Fi, not your cell service. So you buying that one, or is this, you know what I thought of when I heard that? I thought, this is what Ted Thompson meant when he said complicated fella.
Yeah, that's right.
that's what we're
exactly
talking about.
Exactly right. A complicated fella. You knew there'd be a pushback. You knew he'd have a reason. There's no way he's going to say, yeah, my bad. I wish I would have done it better. Wish I would have been more professional. Wish we could have had that conversation. I spent 20 years there. Should have probably ended it a little more amicable, but it's the way it goes sometimes. Nobody wants to take any blame or fault, and they just want to move on. I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we get into the GM notebook, see how we're doing on time. Well, we're doing okay on time. How about this? The Washington Commanders not picking up the fifth-year option for Chase Young. I think what's so interesting about the Chase Young pick, second overall in 2020, it was the fourth straight draft they took a defensive lineman in the first round. They took Jonathan Allen in 2017, eventually gave him a big contract. They took Daron Payne in 2018, gave him a big contract. They took Montez Sweat in 2019. He's going to be on the fifth-year option this year. And then Chase Young with the injury is sort of an intriguing player, isn't he, Randy?
He is. He just hasn't been healthy. He hasn't been on the field. I understand what the Commanders are doing. They'll end up paying the guy just because they didn't take his fifth-year option at this time. It's all about timing, right? He's got to play. Chase Young, I think, has some doubters in that building, and I don't blame him. There's people that think he should be playing and producing. If he does, he'll get paid. If he doesn't, they'll let him walk. It's as simple as that. When you list out your numbers here like you did, the first thing that jumps in my mind is, shouldn't their defense be better? They got four first-round picks like this, and I know they got better a little bit last year as the season went on. But this is a defense that's, to me, has struggled for two or three years now. They got some high volume, big money, highly accoladed players here that just haven't played great. So something's missing there.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see what he can do. I mean, he was big time look as a rookie, and the injury complicates it for him. But maybe, you know, I think they're smart, you know, not doing The options now are fully guaranteed, so I think that's totally smart. But it's just a kind of an interesting guy who I think was thought so highly of coming out, and we'll see if he can recapture it this year. He could be. And I wondered too, Randy, do you think there's any trade possibility for him? I mean, is that the type of player who could be moved when you got these other commitments and maybe somebody else sees him, or no?
Possibly, but you'd have to move him at a discount because no one's seen the tape. Yeah. No one's seen him do anything recently. So when you miss the amount of time he has, that's everybody else watches the same stuff, you know, and has the same questions that the Commanders do. So he'll be sought after, but he needs to put out some real tape and make a difference before he's going to find too many suitors out there. I think potential is dangerous, especially when you make the kind of money that he makes.
Another one I thought was kind of interesting, maybe I'm the only one, but I thought the Arizona Cardinals head coach and GM going to the statue unveiling of Kyler Murray, which, by the way, I mean, that's pretty quick for a statue, but
I thought you were kidding when I saw that. I didn't. I thought you were totally kidding.
They traveled to do that. No, yeah. It's in there. They went to go do that, and it was mocked somewhat. I think Mike Florio made a big deal of it, but you know what really struck me about it, Randy, was the idea that they know they're sinking or swimming with Kyler Murray, and they have no choice but to almost be his friend. Do you think that's what they're doing? What do you think of that? Because Kyler Murray, to me, 10 or 15 years ago, with the mentality of people in the NFL, like, hey, this guy's got to produce. It's right on him, would be the attitude. I don't know if that works with Kyler Murray. What do you think? And what do you think of this type of an approach so publicly, demonstrably being there? Or do you think it's not a big deal?
They're stuck. They're in a tough spot. I agree with you. They are going to have to acquiesce and try to make it work the best they can. The problem with moves like this is you're almost empowering a player who really has been a disappointment. And
yep,
and for the wrong reasons, he's been really disappointing. So it's almost like what Denver did to Russell Wilson last year. And on a lesser note, obviously, but it's kind of, and I've been there, it's a hard card to play if you're the GM, because yeah, this is our guy, somebody else paid him, now we got to try to make it work. I guess what I would do on the back end is I would probably give him support. I just don't want it to be seen in your locker room as all of a sudden this guy's special now and we're empowering him to do whatever he wants. He needs to change too. But the other thing I thought with Murray is that I guess that the timing of it all is interesting, because you mentioned it in the notes. You said that they had to agree to this to get these jobs. I get it. But what I also would have agreed to get the job was, you don't mind, Mr. Bidwell, if we have an option or two down the road here and maybe draft a quarterback later in the draft or do something to give us a better option than Colt McCoy. I would have liked to have at least got them to say, okay, we're good with that. So maybe they can find somebody that they kind of like in the fourth or fifth round that, you know, can actually run a traditional offense, not be the same skill set as Kyler has, and let him prove it. But if he doesn't, we've got an option to fall back on, a younger option than a Colt McCoy.
Yes, this does feel olive branchy almost, right? I mean, Kyler Murray's relationship with the front office and the team didn't seem great, and we know that embarrassing thing that was in his contract about he's got to work harder and all of that. Right. It seems like just overt attempts to really pump him up and embrace him it almost feels like they have to, but your point on Russell Wilson is so true, like,
they just got to be careful.
Going this way doesn't work either, maybe.
Yeah, they're in a tough spot. That's why I said I understand it, but that's a hard deal when you've got an underachieving player who you just rewarded for underachieving, and that's seen in the locker room. I don't care about the fans. I don't care about the outside pressure. I just want to know how it's viewed in the locker room and what the players said about these guys going to something like this. And are they rolling their eyes, or are they saying, hey, way to go, they're supporting all of us? They better do it for everybody else too. That's all I would say.
Interesting. Yeah. Or they may be saying, hey, wait till you see, you know, if there are concerns about how he works, like they put in the contract or the leadership or any of those things, then buddying up too much, not seen as necessarily a positive thing. We'll see how it unfolds. I think the actions will speak louder than the words, and who they draft. There's been talk they could, you know, that Kyler Murray wants them to take an offensive lineman. I mean, is that the next step? They're going to draft an offensive lineman. It's just one on my radar that I think they're an interesting place for a lot of reasons. But attention.
Yeah, what got my attention was Steve Keim did an interview this week too, the former GM who was let go after the season, and he made a statement of, well, if we didn't have Kyler Murray, I wouldn't have got a contract. So he got me a contract extension. That kind of set me a little sideways too, as to what are we doing here? Is that, you know?
And he said if I drafted Bosa, I might have got fired.
Yeah, I don't know. I think both of those statements are wrong. I just didn't like that either. So, again, I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, I'm too old school. I want to take the high road as much as I can.
I'd have to listen to the whole thing. Maybe there was some context. Maybe it was being flip and funny or something. But, yeah, that place has not distinguished itself very well on almost any level Well, last week, I think we were talking about Buda Baker wanting out of there. So he's one of the great things they've got going. There should be a statue for him, and everybody in the organization should go there as they unveil it. How about that?
No kidding. His back is sore from carrying that franchise, I guarantee you. And that's probably why he wants to be traded. His back can't take it anymore. It's a heavy load. Let me just say that.
Yep. So we'll see what the sidling up, how the sidling up to Kyler Murray goes. What's in the GM notebook? I think
not a lot left. I think we kind of pilfered through it already. I'm not blaming you. I'm saying we both kind of picked through it a little bit. There's not a lot left in there. Some of the teams that might make some noise in the draft, I think, are those teams that have the multiple first round picks. That was one thing that I'm always interested in doing because it gives them a chance to maneuver a little bit. It gives them a chance to come back and take something that they passed on earlier. I always like those teams. I guess it's the Eagles, it's the Seahawks, it's Houston. Is there more than that? These guys all have two first round picks.
I think those are interesting teams. I do. I mean, I think there's teams that some of the teams that are really interesting are to me at the top. You mentioned Houston, but I think Arizona too would like to get out of the third pick probably, right? As anybody. Yeah. And to me, what Indy has to choose from is interesting also. Like with such an acute need for quarterback, maybe not, who's there? How do they like him? What does Jim Irsay think? I think they're just what's their timeline, right? They got to get somebody at some point, right?
Yep.
And
no doubt.
This could be a chance. This could be a chance because one of those guys, right? One of those. Do you buy? Remember, we were talking before, as a lot of this offseason went on, it was kind of Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, those will be the top two picks. A lot of people at the combine were taking that to the bank. I mean, how low do you feel like? We assume Bryce Young's going, right? Don't you assume that?
Sounds like it, yep.
I mean, how late could CJ Stroud be available? I think that's kind of an interesting thing.
Well, if you're Seattle, can you pass on that, really? I don't know. Maybe you can.
What about
Maybe.
Indy? Indy can't pass
Indy
on.
Especially, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Indy's going to know a lot about him. It's right up the road. It's 2 hours away, so they're going to have a pretty good picture of what they want with him. They've gone the old route. They've gone the veteran route. They have to solve it right now. So I don't know how Indy could not take a quarterback, but, we'll see. They don't have anybody to play right now, right? It's Sam Ellinger.
They got Gardner Minshew. They got your guy.
Oh, they got Minshew. That's right. Yeah, Ellinger and Minshew, but I don't know that that's going to get it done for him. I did think one other tidbit in the draft, and this is there. Is this the first draft there will only be 31 picks? Did the Patriots lose a pick here or there? Yes,
the Patriots have lost a pick before, so I don't think it's the first time. No,
and it's the pick that Miami loses for tampering with Tom Brady. Correct? So there's only 31 picks in the first round.
So the Steelers own the 32nd pick, but it's a second rounder.
Yeah, there you go. It's just a little quirk. Just a little quirk.
Yeah, that's a little quirky. So I'm ready for the whole thing. I love it as it gets going. So
yeah, I do too. I'll watch for sure.
All right.
That's about all I got, Mike. I got no more GM notebook. I'm kind of anxious like everybody else to see how it unfolds. I just think it's crazy, and it's kind of cool. I'm glad I'm on the outside. As you know, the draft used to be one day. Then it became 2 days. Now it's three nights of prime time. And for those of us that are on the inside in these things, they drag on, man. I mean, it's like 3 days of this stuff, and there's a lot of pomp and circumstance. And I know we're doing this for TV content. I get it. But it sure is, for guys in those offices, it drags on. And you can't wait to get it over with, that's for sure.
But I remember you saying before once that you liked it all in one day because it really tests people.
Yeah, 100%.
You take advantage. Yeah,
yep, I like that. Yeah. I like it. Now it gives you more time to second guess and to do this and do that. I wish they would knock it all out one day, but I understand the realistic side of it. They got to make money in three nights of prime time with number one sport in the world. They're going to stretch it out. So.
Yeah, they are. But yeah, just being on that clock that whole time is kind of arduous, probably. And
yes,
and some people crack or can't handle it as well as other teams. So we shall see. Everybody enjoy the draft. We'll be back with you on the other side for Randy Mueller, who you can find at MuellerFootball.com, and you can find in the Seattle Sea Dragons suite for the playoffs as the GM there. Congratulations. And you can find on Twitter at @RandyMueller_. I'm Mike Sando of The Athletic at SandoNFL on Twitter. We will talk to you next week. We'll be right back.
This was the Athletic Football Show.